the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. If you hadn't guessed, we talk about things that affect your retirement. And today we're going to take the spotlight of focus and place it on the bond market, which is traditionally a staple of investment portfolios. And that would include people who are preparing for retirement or who are in retirement. Now, right now, and you've heard us say it before, but here's the review. Right now, we're in the middle of a rate raising cycle, even though the Fed this last week did not decide to raise it this time around. We are in the late stages of a business cycle, and the question is, how long can they prolong it before the downturn stops? So what we would like to do, given all of this, is alert you to the approaching risks that lie ahead, because the majority of investors, ever since the financial crisis back in 2007-2008, have been pouring money into the bond market or to bond funds or ETFs, thinking that these were risk-free. We're here to tell you today they're not, and what you need to understand about them, and exactly where we are headed so you can make appropriate decisions.
You know, John, what kind of prompted the topic for this week's show was an extended interview I did with Anatole Kalitsky from GabKel, and he recently wrote a piece, Five Bond Market Questions. And there was also this week an article in Barron's called The Ticking Time Bomb and Municipal Bond Market. So I want to set the stage for what is likely setting up for bond market losses for most investors. And I want to begin with the Fed rate raising cycle. The Fed did a pass. This was Yellen's last FOMC meeting as Fed chair. Powell will become Fed chairman beginning this month. So the idea is they are intending to raise rates three times this year. Some think they'll go more. Some people think they'll go less. Nonetheless, the Fed is telling us we're not done yet. We intend to raise rates this year. And if you watch their dot plot, they also intend to carry through and raise rates next year. So if they're expected to raise interest rates three times this year, that would take the Fed funds rate from 1.5 to about 2.25. So short-term rates are rising. But we are also seeing medium-term rates also break out. The 10-year Treasury note is now at 2.75%, with the possibility that we could see 10-year notes get up to 3% this year. And so what happens when interest rates rise? The value of existing bonds decline in value. And that's what we have seen since the beginning of last summer, when interest rates got down to a record low, as they did in the summer of last year, and have risen ever since. And so what does that mean? Rising rates mean falling bond prices.
I guess we'd have to ask then, Jim, what is driving this right now? Is it an anticipation of inflation or pickup in economic growth? There must be some flags that are governing why people are doing what they're doing.
Well, there's a number of things that's driving it. It's anticipation that the economy is picking up, wages are rising, oil prices are rising, commodity prices are rising. So some of it's in inflation, and we'll get into more details. The important thing is, and I don't need to tell you, if you are in a bond fund, chances are the bonds in the fund are long-term bonds, meaning that they're impacted by an increase in interest rates. And so I don't care if you're in a corporate bond fund, a treasury bond fund, emerging market bond fund, high yield bond fund, because most investors pick bond funds based on their yields. And obviously, the higher the yields, the more popular the bond fund. But those higher yields come with the risk. They're usually brought about by either one, longer maturities, meaning long-term bonds pay more than short-term, and then also maybe riskier credits. So you may see lower quality bonds in a portfolio.
Okay, well, given the fact that rates are rising and bond prices go down, what does that mean if you're invested in bonds or ETFs? I'm assuming what we're saying here is the valuation on the bonds is going to go down.
Yeah, you can actually see principal losses that are greater than what you're receiving in income. And I'm going to take three popular ETFs. One is treasuries, one is corporate bonds, and one is junk bonds. If you take a look at the popular largest treasury ETF, TLT, that owns long-term treasuries, it's down 4.8% for the year. So the loss in principal is greater than what you're receiving in interest. Now, if you go to corporate bonds, they pay a little more. LQD, it's down about 1.5% this year. So you've lost more in the first month of this year than what you received in interest. And then, of course, high yield bonds are down about 0.5%. So as rates rise, prices fall on bond funds, negating the returns that you've earned from interest. And in the past, we've had a sort of a brief rise in rates. We had them in 2011. We had them again in 2013, but then they came quickly down. And so for most of this recovery, since 2009, if you were in a bond fund, you were earning interest and your principal was pretty much left intact. And that's because interest rates were declining. But the other aspect about this time around is that bond funds may no longer be the hedge against falling stock prices as they have been in the recent past. And this was something that I discussed rather extensively with my recent interview on FS Insider with Anatole Kolitsky from GavCal Research, because typically over the last probably maybe 3 or 4 decades, when you went through a bear market in stocks, as we did, for example, in 2000, 2002, and of course, the financial crisis, long-term interest rates came down. And so actually bonds went up in value. So one way to hedge against stock market losses was to go into bonds. And that's what a lot of people do. But we are starting from an historically low level. So strategies for wealth preservation are going to be a bit different this time. It's been, by my recollection, 1981? It's been almost 37 years since we saw a bear market in bonds. So, John, investors have no idea what a bond bear market looks like and the losses that can occur in their portfolios. When I got in the business in 1980 and 1981, we used to call bonds certificates of confiscation. Because if you recall, back in 1981, 10-year treasuries got up to a yield of almost 15.8, almost 16%. Money market funds were paying 18%. So imagine somebody that was in a bond. They didn't have as many bond funds back then. So most individuals, if they were wealthy, owned individual bonds. But imagine if you had a 20, 30-year bond that was paying 3% or 4%, and interest rates climbed all the way to where they reached their summit in 1981. I can remember distinctively when I first got in the business working on a case. This gentleman was a CEO of a major Fortune 500 company. He retired, had his pension, had well over $1 million portfolio in bonds, had his house free and clear. But that bond portfolio, that $1 million portfolio, was worth only about $600,000. He had lost over $400,000 in market value throughout the 70s as the Fed raised interest rates and as inflation levels climbed. We could be approaching a similar period again as deficits begin to explode in the latter part of this decade and most certainly in the next decade.
We do know, Jim, that there is a high concentration of investment in bonds or bond funds by the public. So is the primary driver here then just inflation, or are there actually other factors?
You know, there's a number of factors. Number one, economic growth is picking up. We had 2% growth rates and under during the Obama administration. And now it's looking like the economy is heading for 3% plus. So faster economic growth is one. And of course, rising oil prices and inflation. And then the other thing that we're seeing, and it's happening here, it's happening in Canada, it's happening in England, is the end of this era of monetary easing. The Fed was the first to start raising interest rates. Then we had the Bank of England, the Bank of Canada, and then it's estimated that next year the Bank of Japan and the ECB will begin raising interest rates. A fourth factor which is contributing is the Fed is shrinking its balance sheet. By the end of March of this year, they will let $30 billion a month expire, meaning that instead of when a bond matures, they take the money, they go out and buy another bond, they're not going to be doing that. And so what's going to happen, that is withdrawing $30 billion a month in liquidity out of the bond market. The other factor we know is that deficits are starting to increase, and part of it is on automatic pilot, and that's due to the increase in entitlements, because Social Security, Medicare, interest on the debt is almost 70% of government spending right now, and that's going to increase as more and more boomers head into retirement, drawing on Social Security and drawing on Medicare. So, John, there's a number of factors that are all converging that are going to probably drive rates higher and inflation down the road as we take a look at rising deficits and a rise in inflation levels as the Fed, in the end, will be forced to monetize much of these rising deficits.
Yeah. Okay. So how do investors protect themselves in the environment in which we find ourselves? And I really want to point out here, we're not just talking about a single burp, you know, one single storm that you ride out and then everything goes back to normal. We're probably discussing a series of onrushing storms that will follow one right behind the other. And you have to be able to function in this environment.
Well, you're right. If you are in bond funds, which is probably most of the people that have bonds and listening to this program, you need to shift to shorter term bonds to protect your principal. Because what good does it do if you get 3% in a bond fund like TLT, but you just lost 5% in the first month of the year? And the other thing is, if you can afford it and your portfolio is large enough, you need to consider going to a laddered bond portfolio where you have bonds that have maturities from 1 to 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. So every single year you have bonds that come due. And what that allows you to do, number one, when your bond comes due, you don't lose any principal. You get your money back. Number two, if interest rates are rising, you can invest those maturities at a higher interest rate. And also, you may want to consider what is called adjustable rate bonds. These are bonds that adjust every quarter, every 6 months. So as interest rates rise, let's say you're making 4% on these bonds, interest rates go up a quarter of a point as a result of Fed rate hikes, then guess what? Your interest rate goes up a quarter of a point. So you participate with rising interest rates, and that helps not only bring more income, but also helps to protect your principal. And so that's one of the things that we're doing with our clients. We're using interest rate floaters. We're using laddered bond portfolios. And we use a few of what we call probably some of the best actively managed bond portfolios in the world. So the problem with bonds in bear markets is a bond bear market lasts a very long time. It's been 37 years since we saw the last one, which ended in August of 1981. And when they begin, they can last multi-decades. Just as interest rates began to rise in the late 50s, that rise took place in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, culminating in a peak in the summer of 1981. So if you are in bond funds, you need to start taking evasive action now.
I guess we should ask, does this apply to all bond funds?
You know, a lot of it depends on something called duration, the average maturity of a bond fund. Chances are most people that own bond funds, John, are in long-term funds. So you really need to take a look at what the maturities are and the credit quality of the bonds that you own in that bond fund or ETF, because you really need to know that makeup, because the longer the maturity, the lower the credit, the greater the vulnerability. So that is one thing that you should really investigate and understand what it is that you own.
Yeah, and I can see a reason why people would be reluctant to sort of do that, because if they go into shorter term bond funds, the interest rate's going to be less.
Well, you got to look at it this way. I mean, TLT pays close to 3%, but it's already lost almost 5% in the first month of the year. So you got to take a look at that. And if this is a long term trend, are you going to want to be receiving income And then at the same time, look at your principal dropping every single year. So you got to look at protecting principal, because you don't want to go through a drawdown of your assets just to receive income. And that's the advantage of having a laddered bond portfolio and adjustable rate bonds. You take advantage of rising rates. At the same time, you're protecting your principal. So if you are in bond funds and don't want to lose out on income, I strongly suggest you consider switching to a laddered bond portfolio so that you're not impacted by rising rates and adjustable rate bonds. But I want to move on to another area of the bond market, and this gets to the Barron's article that's running this week, and that is the ticking time bomb in municipal bonds. Now, we did a show last year, I think it was in the last quarter of the year, based on a report that came out on Moody's, taking a look at the finances of all 50 states, because Moody's was saying, look, we know sooner or later we're going to have a recession. And if we do, how much will this recession impact the budgets and the credit quality of many of these states? As much as they'd seen it happen in the last financial crisis, they had never seen budgets get blown out like we did between 2007 and 2010. And what they came out with, Moody's came out and said that, look, there are a lot of states that are going to be in trouble, and we'll get into that in just a minute and tell you who they are. But there's also two other studies that have come out recently, one by the Pew Trust and the other by the Tax Foundation. And this was referenced in the Barron's article. Both studies talk about, and here's the big problem at the state level, unfunded pension liabilities of state governments. Now, the Pew Trust puts those unfunded liabilities at close to $1.1 trillion, and that's not a typo. And here's the other thing. The aggregate funding levels for most states is only about 72%, meaning that states have only put aside about 70% of the money they need to meet their future pension obligations. And that's going to either indicate a problem, or states are going to have to start raising taxes. And that's not a good thing given this new tax law, especially states like California, New York, and New Jersey, where tax rates are the highest in the country. And those tax payments that you pay to the state are no longer deductible. So states are going to find themselves in a very tough bind. And as we have talked about, you are going to see a great migration out of these high tax states where the cost of living is high, which means your home costs a lot more money, which means you're paying more in property taxes. Property tax deductions are limited. Interest rate deductions are going to be limited. And then you get no deduction for state taxes. So this is going to create a problem for the states. And what's more, these pension liabilities are grossly understated, as Pew and many others talk about. Pensions come up with an assumption rate when they're managing their portfolios. They're saying, look, our goal is to achieve a 7 or 8% rate of return, and that 8% of return, we can fund our liabilities. According to Pew, the average rate used by pension funds is 7.6%. Well, that isn't a realistic return. The only way you would have gotten 7.6% a year is if you've been in the stock market over the last couple of years. Pew found that there were only 8 states out of 50 that were 90% funded for their pensions. 21 states were only 70% or below, and 4 states were below 50%, meaning they're going to have some major problems. Illinois is right there at the top of the list. California is another one. There was also another legislative organization called American Legislative Exchange. And what they did is they took a look at these pensions and they said, you know, what is a realistic return that these pensions have been earning on their portfolio? And 2 to 3% is more likely what they've been earning, because a lot of them are invested heavily in the bond market. And as we're well aware, interest rates are at basically historical levels. Based on those returns, they believe that only roughly about 34% of pension liabilities are fully funded, meaning that they've only put aside about 34% of what they need to meet those future pension obligations. And they listed the 10 states is the best funded states. And this was somewhat surprising in many ways in terms of who they are. Nebraska, Maine, Utah, Delaware, John, your own state of Idaho, North Carolina, Tennessee, New York, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And the states most likely to run into big problems are states like Arizona. And one of the reasons that many of these states are having problems is they're losing taxpayers. They have large welfare and pension obligations. And then many of these states are heavily dependent for federal aid to fund their budgets. And there are five states that they mention that are heavily dependent on the U.S. government. Louisiana is dependent on 42% of their revenues come from the federal government. Mississippi, 42%. Arizona, 40%. Kentucky, close to 40%. New Mexico, 39%. So when you have a state that is heavily dependent on federal revenues to meet their budget, you could be in trouble as these deficits get blown out of the water in the years ahead. And so, John, this is creating a liability and problem in the municipal bond market. And that's why Barron's is talking about, for muni bond investors, this is a ticking time bomb.
You know, and what's really sobering is that when you recognize that there are several studies out right now, the Pew Trust, Moody's, and the Tax Foundation are all saying that quite a number of these states are going to be in deep trouble in the next recession because of where they are poised financially, and they're coasting along on the good times right now, you know, like the Trump euphoria. But if they try to raise taxes in order to compensate for that, that's going to cause a huge migration of businesses and people that will not be able to tolerate any more of the tax abuse. And I can think of the states that are in a race to the bankruptcy bottom, you know, California, Illinois. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens to those states, and especially their pension plans if they're invested into these funds.
Well, you're right. It's going to create a migration, and you're already seeing it take place. In fact, we did an interview on Lifetime with one of the top tax attorneys in the country who happens to be domiciled in Los Angeles in California. One of the things he said in that interview is he is seeing a larger migration of his clients out of the state. They're usually taking place with executives that work at some of these tech companies that have large stock options. And so they'll exit the state as they get ready to retire, people that are selling their businesses. So the more you raise taxes, the more onerous that burden becomes, the more likely you're going to see a greater exodus. And even now, probably the change in this tax law is going to accelerate that exodus because, you know, if you're in a high tax state, like I am in California, where the tax rate is 13.3. And John, it's not just income taxes. California is raising taxes on everything. I mean, if it moves and it breathes, they're finding ways to tax it. And they've been raising taxes just about every single year throughout this economic recovery because their pension obligations, their welfare obligations, their employee compensation levels are so high. The only thing they know how to do, and they think they can get away with it, is just keep raising taxes. Well, that's not going to work. And as Moody's talked about when they did their State of the States, states that increasingly rely on a progressive income tax are most vulnerable. I know my own state of California, the budget analysis done on the recent budget said that they could see a $20+ billion budget deficit in the next recession. And that's because California relies on over 20% of its revenues come from capital gains. Think Silicon Valley, think Facebook, Google, Alphabet, Apple, all these tech stocks that reward their employees with stock options. It's been a windfall to the state of California in tax revenues. That can change in a downturn. And it's more likely that you're going to see more and more states. We did a show where, you know, for example, in the state of Connecticut, you had one hedge fund move and relocate to Florida, and the loss, the resulting loss, was over $200 million in tax revenues to the state. And John, you know, it won't be long before states like California wake up to the fact we're losing these people. But, you know, the idiots in Sacramento, rather than realizing changing and getting its house in fiscal order, they would probably try to get some kind of exit tax and raise taxes even more, which has been the pattern that we've seen over the last 10 years.
So here comes my famous question. What changes should bond investors make if they're in bond funds right now, given this approaching scenario?
You know, if you are in a long-term bond fund, and you can find that out by just looking at the prospectus or the latest report that you've gotten from your fund company or ETF, is you need to start getting defensive. You need to switch to short-term bond funds to protect your principal. And if you are in long-term funds, you need to shorten the maturities. And you might want to consider switching from a bond fund to a laddered bond portfolio of individual bonds. You have more predictability, you have more stability, and you can protect your capital and take advantage of rising interest rates rather than see the share value decline as interest rates rise. And if you are a well-heeled investor, you're fortunate enough, you're in a high tax bracket, you've been using individual municipal bonds, you better start checking the credit rating of your bond and the credit rating of your state in the years ahead. Because as Barron's talked about, this is a ticking time bomb for many of these states that they're not going to be able to fund their pensions. And as we've seen here in California, when municipalities default on their bonds, the pensions take priority and the bond holders get the shaft. So it is time to be proactive. And that's why, you know, if you're in one of those situations, you know, call your advisor. If you don't have one that is familiar with the bond markets or individual bonds, give us a call and we'd be glad to review your bond portfolio or look at your credit ratings, because you really need to take this serious, because you haven't seen a bond bear market in almost four decades. Most people that are in bonds today don't even know what it's like. And it's amazing, because I sort of cut my teeth in a bond bear market when I got in the business back in 1980 and 81, when interest rates were rising, when inflation was running at 14% a year, and treasury bonds had gone from 2% in the 50s all the way up to almost 16% by 1981. So, you know, we're in one of those periods. They take time to unfold. But do you really want to be in a position where every single year or every couple of years, you see the value of your principal go down in value? How are you going to fight rising inflation?
Coming up tomorrow on the program, Judy Barr, the benefits of yoga for health, heart, and flexibility. Now time for our lifetime income study based on real life situations. And please remember that as you listen to this, this is a hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. The names and circumstances have been changed, and we always have slides online at financialsense.com to illustrate the points being made. So give us an example here of rescuing yourself from an oncoming bond storm.
Well, this week's case is John and Kara Wallace. John is 63, Kara is 68. 5-year age difference, with Kara being older. Both are retired, and life expectancy for both is 90 for John and 92 for Kara. Their risk tolerance, like many individuals that are retired, pretty conservative, income and capital preservation. John was an executive. He worked as an executive officer for his company and was very busy with work-related travel. He had liked to move to Wyoming or Montana and settle down with his wife. His wife was an HR director, and she was busy just like John. They both led busy work lives, but they want to move, but doesn't enjoy the cold winters and would like to be closer to both their kids and grandchildren. So they're wanting to move where the cost of living is cheaper. There is no taxes. And, you know, they kind of like, hey, can we live in two places? So what was important to both of them? Managing taxes, another reason to leave California, leaving a legacy to their heirs, maximizing their income, and for them, kind of relocating. Their budget was $80,000 for essential, discretionary was $65,000, so roughly about $145,000 of income, less his salary, $176,000, leaving a surplus of $31,000. Now, when they took a look at a retirement budget, they thought they could get their budget down to $60,000, discretionary about $50,000, that would leave them about $110,000. With pensions and Social Security, that would provide $80,000, so there'd be a shortfall of roughly $30,000. Now let's look at assets. Their home was $375,000, liabilities of about $268,000. They had joint accounts worth about $725,000. John's IRA retirement $348,000, and Kara's $587,000. So they had roughly about $1.7 million in investable assets, liabilities of about $268,000. Now, one of the things that we had to take a look at is they had many expensive desires they would like to pursue. They'd like to live in two homes. And, you know, anybody that goes to an area, whether it's like Arizona or Nevada, where it's hot, or a cold place like back east, or in this case, Montana, you know, you want to be out of that state during the rougher periods of the year, whether it's heat or it's cold. The estate plan, we also found, hadn't been updated for 15 years. And of course, taxes were a major concern given their income. So what we did is we put together a balanced portfolio, which is pretty much what you want to have when you're retired. You know, one of the things you want to avoid is having everything in one asset class, be it stocks, be it bonds, commodities, or cash. It's just something that's not going to work. So that would produce roughly a grand total of investment income of about a little over $51,000, bringing their total income to almost $132,000, less a budget of about $110,000, leaving them a surplus of $21,000. One of the things that we said, look, sell the home in California and buy a home in Montana where you could pay for a cash. So what does that do? Number one, it would be easier to buy a house for cash in Montana than it would here in California. So that's one thing. And that would free up some capital and income where you could come out, let's say during the winter months, come back to California, be with the kids, rent a place for 3 or 4 months and get through the winters. The other thing is we recommended delaying Social Security to age 70 and relocate basically out of California to reduce expenses. And that would happen because they would be in a no tax state versus a high tax state. And then what we wanted them to do is, since their IRAs were a major portion of their investment portfolio, is use the IRA stretch provisions and update their estate plan to take advantage of the new state of Wyoming. So John, here once again is a couple relocating from a high tax, high cost of living state to a low, no tax, low cost of living state. And I predict this is going to be a trend. You know, we're seeing it in our own practice with almost 30%, almost 40% of clients. And I think that's going to accelerate as a result of this tax law. And especially as California passes one tax bill after another, they just keep raising taxes every year. And what it's doing, it's driving middle class people out of the state, and it's going to drive businesses out of the state. We've got three new tax bills on the agenda. One would take 50% of the tax savings if you have a corporation. With the tax rates being lowered from 35% to 21, that's a reduction of 14 percentage points. California would add a surtax and take half of it back and assess you with a special assessment. And John, all this is going to do is drive people out of the state, and they really don't get that. So, but once again, a trend that you're going to see going forward.
And talking of trends, Judy Barr, Benefits of Yoga for Heart Health and Flexibility, tomorrow, Jim's guest here on the program. Anything special coming up in the weeks to come here on Lifetime Income?
I think a lot of it is going to be watching interest rates, this market and the stock market melt up, and then what's going to happen with the infrastructure spending. How are they going to pay for it? The president's proposing close to $1 trillion. You add that to the tax cuts, it's going to be interesting to see how it's going to be financed. But I think a lot of this, John, is we're in the middle of tax season. We're going to have to be talking about this more and more, because as we take a look at the impact of this tax bill, it is affecting so many people. And it's just like today's case study. Why stay here with a high cost, high tax state when you can relocate to a place that's cheaper to live? You can buy a home that's much cheaper in California and pay no taxes or low taxes. And I think that's a big trend you're going to see take place over the next 10 years. Well, that concludes today's program. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.